comes next?" Palpatine shook his head as if to clear it.
"What would I do?"
"What do you want to do, Palpatine? If the choice was yours and yours alone?" The youth hesitated.
"I don't want to live as ordinary beings live."
Plagueis regarded him. "Do you fancy yourself extraordinary?" Palpatine seemed embarrassed by the question.
"I only meant that I want to live an extraordinary life."
"Make no apologies for your desires. Extraordinary in what way?" Palpatine averted his eyes. "Why are you holding back? If you're going to dream, then dream large." Plagueis paused, then added, "You hinted that you had no interest in politics, is that true?" Palpatine firmed his lips.
"Not entirely."
Plagueis came to a stop in the middle of the walkway. "How deep does your interest go? To what position do you aspire? Republic Senator? Monarch of Naboo? Supreme Chancellor of the Republic?" Palpatine glanced at him.
"You'll think less of me if I tell you."
"Now you underestimate me, as you do your father."
Palpatine took a breath and continued. "I want to be a force for change."
His look hardened.
"I want to rule."
"There," Plagueis thought. "He admits it. And who better than a human to wear the mask of power while an immortal Sith Lord rules in secret? If that can't happen, if you can't rule, then what?"
Palpatine ground his teeth. "If not power, then nothing."
Plagueis smiled. "Suppose I said that I would be willing to be your ally in the quest."
At a sudden loss for words, Palpatine stared at him. Then he managed to say, "What would you expect of me in return?"
"Nothing more than that you commit to your intent to free yourself. That you grant yourself the license to do whatever is necessary to realize your ambitions at whatever risk to your alleged well-being and in full expectation of the solitude that will ensue." They had not yet reached the lodge when Plagueis steered them into a gazebo that occupied the center of a luxuriant garden. "I want to tell you something about my past," he began. "I was born and raised not on Munalist, but on a world called Mygeeto. And not to my father's primary wife, but to a second wife, what Munes call a codicil partner. So I was a young adult before my father was finally returned to Munalist, and I had my first taste of the planet that gave rise to my species. Owing to Munalist's regulations governing population growth, no Mune of less influence than my father would have been allowed to import a non-indigenous offspring, let alone a half-clan. And yet the members of my father's family regarded me as a trespasser, lacking proper legality and the social aplomb that comes to those born and raised on Munalist. For if there is anything the Mune detest more than wasteful spending, it is nonconformity, and I had it in abundance. They were model citizens, my fair brothers and sisters, insular, self-important, identical in their thinking, thrifty to a fault, given to gossip, and it angered me deeply to have been accepted by the galaxy's downtrodden, only to be rejected by this hive of self-serving parochial beings. Much to their further displeasure, they were forced to accept that I was a fully bonded clan member, entitled to the same share of my father's vast wealth as the rest of them. But as is the case with all members of the elite clans, I had to prove myself worthy of the status by preparing successful financial forecasts and allowing myself to be judged by the ruling elect. I passed my tests and trials, but soon after, my father took ill. On his deathbed, I sought his advice concerning my predicament, and he told me that I should do whatever I needed to do, as my very survival was in jeopardy. He said that lesser minds needed guidance, and punishment on occasion,
and that I shouldn't hesitate to use whatever means necessary to protect my interests, that I owed as much to myself, my species, to life itself. Plagueis paused. The cause of his premature death was determined to be a rare genetic abnormality that affected the tertiary heart, and one that all of my siblings had inherited, but I, having been born to a different mother, had not. Panicked by the thought of early death, my siblings launched a galactic search for the finest geneticist's credits could procure, and ultimately one surfaced, claiming knowledge of a curative procedure. And so they underwent treatment, each and every one of them, my clan mother included, in full confidence that they had dodged the family curse and could soon return to their primary passion, which was to have me legally ostracized from the family. He looked hard at Palpatine. Little did they realize that I had hired the geneticist, and that the treatments he provided were as phony as his credentials. And so, in due course, they began to grow ill and die, each of them, as I watched from afar, gloating, even entertaining myself by feigning sadness at their funerals and indifference at the allocation rituals that transferred portions of their accumulated riches to me. Eventually, I outlived all of them and inherited everything. His amalgam of fact and fiction concluded, Plagueis stood tall and folded his thin arms across his chest. In turn, Palpatine trained his gaze on the gazebo's wooden floor. Plagueis detected the quiet whir of 114D's photoreceptors focusing on the youth. You think me a monster, he said when a long moment of silence had elapsed. Palpatine raised his head and said, You underestimate me, Magister. Hanna City Spaceport was chaotic with the launch of starships returning youth program trainees to their near and distant homeworlds. In the central passenger cabin of the Naboo vessel Jaffin 3, Palpatine and a young trainee from Karen were comparing notes on their experiences during the previous week. On a track to becoming close friends, despite their political differences, the pair had segued into discussing Naboo's upcoming election when a flight attendant interrupted them to say that Palpatine needed to return immediately to the spaceport terminal. The attendant didn't know who had requested his presence or why, but no sooner had he entered the connector than he recognized the stern countenance of one of the security guards his father had recently hired. Palpatine won't be reboarding, the guard told the attendant. Confused, Palpatine demanded to know why he had been removed from the ship. Your father is here, the guard said after the attendant had re-entered the starship. He pointed through the connector's transparisteel viewport to the far side of the field, where sat a sleek starship bearing the crest of House Palpatine. Palpatine blinked in surprise. When did he arrive? An hour ago. Your mother and siblings are also aboard. They didn't say anything to me about coming here. I wouldn't know about that, the guard said. You've already cleared Chandrila customs, so we can proceed directly to the ship. Palpatine glared at him. Just discharging your orders, is that it? Unruffled, the guard shrugged his broad shoulders. It's a job, kid. That's the long and short of it. Surrendering to the inevitable, but angered by the sudden change in plans, Palpatine trailed the guard through a maze of similar connectors to one that accessed the family starship. The elder Palpatine was waiting in the entry airlock. Why wasn't I informed of this beforehand? Palpatine demanded. His father nodded for the guard to seal the hatch. Your mother and siblings are aft. I'll join you there once we've completed the jump. Maneuvering around Palpatine, he slipped into the cockpit. Palpatine turned to the airlock hatch and considered leaving while he had the chance, but ultimately thought better of it and went aft. though into not the main compartment, but a smaller one that housed the communications suite. Strapped into an acceleration chair, he stewed through the launch and the jump to hyperspace. Unfastening himself when the ship was between worlds, he stood up and began to pace back and forth in the cabin, and was still in motion when his father entered a few minutes later.
"Our course is set for Chamal Minor."
Palpatine stopped to stare at him.
"For the foreseeable future, you're going to be residing with the Grigetus family. Clothes and other items we thought you'd like to have with you are already aboard."
When Palpatine said nothing, he continued.
"You and Janus got along well the last time we visited. A change of scene will do you good."
"You decided this without conferring with me?"
Palpatine managed to ask at last.
"What about my university courses? What about my obligations to the youth program?"
"That has all been arranged. You can partner with Janus in Chamal Minor's program."
"The Grigetus' hatred of non-humans meets with your approval, then?"
"Their chauvinism notwithstanding, I approve of them a lot more than I do of your current friends."
Palpatine began shaking his head.
"No, no."
His father's tone turned harsh.
"This is for your own good."
Palpatine's nostrils flared.
"Father of lies," he muttered. "How would you know what's good for me? Have you ever even cared? This is about my friendship with Higo Damask, isn't it?"
The elder Palpatine snorted in derision.
"Is that what you think it is? Damask is merely using you as a means of securing information about our strategies for the election."
"Of course he is."
Taken aback momentarily, Kasinga said,
"And yet you continue to befriend him?"
"What you consider the rape of Naboo, I consider to be an essential step forward, and Higo Damask a blessing. He's powerful, influential, and brilliant. More so than any of my professors. Head and shoulders above you, or any of your royal confederates."
Kasinga's lip curled.
"It begins to sound to me that this confrontation goes beyond mere political differences."
"You know it does. You're using the situation as an excuse to put me under your thumb again."
"Which wouldn't be necessary if you showed even the slightest ability to conduct yourself appropriately."
Palpatine sniffed.
"My social infractions and trespasses. I refuse to go over old ground."
"You're easy on yourself, considering the shame you've nearly brought on us."
"I've brought no more shame on the family than you have."
"We're not discussing me,"
Kasinga said.
Palpatine threw up his hands. "All right, leave me on Chamal Minor, but I won't remain there."
"I can see to it that you do."
"By assigning some of your muscle men to keep me in line? I'm a lot smarter than them, father."
Kasinga made his lips a thin line.
"After what you already did to counter our plans for Tapelo, there can be no hint of scandal. Have you no idea what's at stake for Naboo?"
"And for you," Palpatine said with a sly smile. "The brother of your mistress becomes king, and you attain the lofty position you've always desired but don't deserve."
Kasinga flung his words with cruel abandon.
"It will be so good to have you gone."
"Finally, you admit as much."
Kasinga was suddenly crestfallen.
"You're as much a mystery to me now as you were when you were young."
Palpatine's smile bloomed.
"Only because you lack the ability to understand me fully."
"Grandiose as ever."
"Grandiose, in fact, father. You have no idea what I'm capable of. No one does."
Kasinga exhaled deeply.
"I know that you are of my blood, because I had you tested, just to be certain. But in truth, I don't know where you came from. Who or what you're actually descended from."
He glared at Palpatine.
"Yes, there it is. That glower I have been on the receiving end of for 17 long years. As if you want to murder me. Murder has always been in your thoughts, hasn't it? You've merely been waiting for someone to grant you permission to act."
A darkness came over Palpatine's face.
I don't need anyone's permission.
Precisely. You're an animal at heart.
King of the beasts, father, Palpatine said.
I knew this day would come. I've known it since the first moment I tried to swaddle you, and you fought me with a strength that was too powerful for your size or age.
Palpatine looked out from beneath his quirked eyebrows. I was born at your father, fully grown, and you hated me for it, because you grasped that I was everything you can never be.
Hated you more than you know, Kasinga said, allowing his ire to rise once more. Enough to want to kill you from the start.
Palpatine stood his ground. Then you had better do it now. Kasinga took a step in Palpatine's direction, only to be hurled back against the bulkhead separating the communications room from the main cabin. A female voice from behind the closed hatch asked in distress, What was that? Nursing an injured shoulder, Kasinga looked suddenly like a trapped animal, his eyes wide with surprise and fear. He made a move to strike the hand plate that opened the hatch, but Palpatine thwarted his effort without raising a finger. Twisting violently around, Kasinga fell over one of the acceleration chairs, bloodying his face as it struck the armrest. A pounding began on the hatch.
Guards!
Kasinga shouted. But the word had barely left his lips when the bulkhead against which he was slouched buckled inward, heaving him face first to the floor and driving the breath from him. Palpatine stood rooted in place, his hands trembling in front of him and his face stricken. Something stirred behind his incandescent eyes. He heard the pounding on the hatch and whirled.
Don't come in! Stay away from me!
What have you done? It was his mother's voice, panicked.
What have you done?
Kasinga pushed himself to his knees and began a terrified retreat, leaving smears of blood on the deck. But Palpatine was advancing on him now.
If the Force birthed you, then I curse it,
Kasinga rasped.
I curse it.
As I do, Palpatine growled. The hatch began to slide too, and he heard the voice of the guard who had escorted him from the Jaffan 3.
Stop!
Kasinga!
His mother screamed. Palpatine pressed the palms of his hands to his head. Then, in eerie calm, streaked to the hatch, pulled the surprised guard through the threshold, and tossed him clear across the cabin. Raising his face to the ceiling, he shouted,
We're all in this now!
They could have been torturers. Plagueis and 114D leaning over an operating table on a bora that supported Venomous, still in an induced coma, and now anesthetized as well. The droid's appendages holding bloodied scalpels, retractors, hemostats, and Plagueis, gowned and masked with his eyes closed, his shadow puddled on the floor by the theater lights. But in truth, nowhere to be found in the mundane world. Folded deeply within the Force instead, indifferent to the meticulous damage 114D had done to the Bith's internal organs, but focused on communicating his will directly to the Force's intermediaries, the droid monitoring cellular activity for signs that Plagueis' life-extending manipulations, his thought experiments, were having their intended effect. A sudden current of intense dark side energy snaked through Plagueis, stronger than any feeling he had experienced since the death of Darth Tenebris, replete with flashes of past, present, and perhaps future events. The disturbance was powerful enough to snap him completely out of his trance. A rite performed, a confirmation conferred. Half expecting to find Venomous sitting upright on the table, he opened his eyes to the sight of 114D shuffling toward him from the operating theater's communication console. Plagueis' mouth formed a question.
Ill?
No. The young human. Palpatine. A deep space transmission.
Plagueis hurried to the device. They hadn't spoken since the reunion on Chandrila, but Plagueis had been waiting, wondering if his manipulations had borne fruit. If not, then he might have to take personal action to solidify the Naboo Gambit. Placing himself in view of the holocams,
He took a moment to appraise the noisy image on screen. Palpatine's face, bathed in the flashing lights of an instrument panel. Something new in his eyes, color that hadn't been there previously. A glance at the comboard's coordinate readout, then...
Where are you?
I'm not sure,
Palpatine said in clear distraction, his gaze shifting to something off-cam.
You're in a starship.
Palpatine nodded, swallowed, and found his voice.
The family ship.
Read aloud the navicomputer coordinates. When he had, Plagueis looked to 114D for elaboration.
Rimward of Exodine, along the Hydean Way.
Plagueis absorbed it.
Contact the Sun Guard. Have them ready a ship and prepare yourself to accompany them.
Yes, Magister.
Plagueis swung back to the monitor screen.
Are you capable of maintaining your present course?
Palpatine leaned to one side.
The autopilot is engaged.
Tell me what happened.
The human took a deep breath.
My father arrived unexpectedly on Chandralar. He had me taken from the youth program vessel and brought to our ship. My mother and siblings were already aboard. After the launch, I learned that I was being taken to Chomel Minor, just as you warned. We fell into an argument. Then, I'm not sure what happened.
Tell me what happened, Plagueis demanded.
I killed them,
Palpatine snarled back.
I killed them, even the guards.
Plagueis restrained a smile, knowing now that Naboo would be his.
Over and done with.
Now to reel him in further and ensure his continued usefulness.
Did anyone on Chandralar observe you board the family ship? He asked quickly.
Only the guard. And he's dead. Everyone's dead.
We need to return you quietly and covertly to Chandralar. I'm sending help, my droid among them. Offer no explanations of what occurred, even if asked. But follow every command without question.
You're not coming with them?
Palpatine asked, wide-eyed.
I will see you soon enough, Palpatine.
But the ship, the evidence...
I'll make arrangements for the ship's disposal. No one will ever learn of this event. Do you understand?
Palpatine nodded.
I trust you.
Plagueis returned the nod.
And Palpatine... Congratulations on becoming an emancipated being.
Sleek as the deep sea creature on which it was modeled, the passenger ship Quantum Colossus plied the rarefied currents of hyperspace. One of the finest vessels of its type, the QC made weekly runs between Coruscant and Eriadu, reverting at several worlds along the Hydean Way to take on or discharge passengers. Draped in muted green shimmer silk, Plagueis had boarded at Corellia, but had waited until the ship made the jump to light speed before riding a turbolift to the upper tier and announcing himself at the entryway to the private cabin he had secured for Palpatine.
You said soon!
Palpatine barked the moment the hatch had pocketed itself in the bulkhead.
A standard week is not soon!
Plagueis entered, removed his robe, and folded it over the back of the chair.
I had business to attend to. He glanced over his shoulder at Palpatine. Was I simply supposed to drop everything in service to the predicament you've gotten yourself into?
Speechless for a moment, Palpatine said,
Forgive me for having allowed myself to believe that we were in this together.
Together? How so?
Am I not your agent on Naboo?
Plagueis rocked his head from side to side.
You did provide us with some useful information.
Palpatine studied him uncertainly.
I did more than that, Magister, and you're well aware of it. You share as much responsibility for what happened as I do.
Plagueis seated himself and crossed one leg over the other knee.
Has it really been only a week? For you seem greatly changed. Were the Chandralan and Naboo authorities so rough on you?
Palpatine continued to stare at him.
As you promised, where there is no evidence, there is no crime. They went so far as to enlist the aid of salvagers and pirates in the search, but
came up empty-handed. His look hardened. But it's you who have changed, despite the fact that you saw this event in the making.
Plagueis motioned to himself. Did I suspect that you and your father might reach an impasse? Of course. It would have been obvious to anyone. But you seem to be implying that I somehow divined that the confrontation would end in violence.
Palpatine considered it, then snorted in derision.
You're lying! You may as well have forced my hand!
What an odd way to put it, Plagueis said. But since you've grasped the truth of it, I offer a confession. Yes, I deliberately goaded you.
You came to Chandra-La to make certain that my father's spies would see us together.
Once more, correct. You make me proud of you.
Palpatine ignored the flattery.
You used me.
There was no other way.
Palpatine shook his head in angry disbelief.
Was any of the story about your siblings true?
Some of it. But that scarcely matters now. You asked for my help, and I provided it. Your father attempted to thwart you, and you acted of your own free will.
And by killing him, I've rid you of an opponent.
Palpatine paused.
My father was right about you. You are a gangster.
And you are free and wealthy, Plagueis said. So what now, young human? I continue to have great hopes for you. But before I could tell you everything, I needed you to be free.
Free from what?
From fear of expressing your true nature.
Palpatine's expression darkened.
You know nothing of my true nature.
He paced away from Plagueis, then stopped and turned to him.
You never asked about the killings.
I've never been one for grim details, Plagueis said. But if you need to unburden yourself, do so.
Palpatine raised his clawed hands.
I executed them with these, and with the power of my mind. I became a storm, Magister. A weapon strong enough to warp bulkheads and hurl bodies across cabin spaces. I was death itself.
Plagueis sat tall in the chair, in genuine astonishment. He could see Palpatine now in all his dark glory. Anger and murder had pulled down the walls he had raised, perhaps since infancy, to safeguard his secret. But there was no concealing it now. The Force was powerful in him. Bottled up for 17 standard years, his innate power had finally burst forth and could never again be stoppered. All the years of repression, guiltless crimes, raw emotion bubbling forth, toxic to any who dared touch or taste it. But beneath his anger lurked a subtle enemy, apprehension. Newly reborn, he was at great risk, but only because he didn't realize just how powerful he was, or how extraordinarily powerful he could become. He would need help to complete his self-destruction. He would need help rebuilding those walls to keep from being discovered. Oh, what a cautious taming he would require, Plagueis thought. But what an ally he might make. What an ally. I'm not sure I know what to think of this, Palpatine, he said at last. Have you always had such powers? Color had drained from Palpatine's face, and his legs were shaking.
I've always known that I was capable of summoning them.
Plagueis rose from the chair and approached him warily. Here is where the path bifurcates, young human. Here and now you need to decide whether to disavow your power or to venture courageously and scrupulously into the depths of truth, no matter the consequences. He resisted an urge to grasp Palpatine by the shoulder, and instead paced away from him.
You could devote the rest of your life to trying to make sense of this power, this gift, he said without looking back. Or you could consider a different option.
He swung to face Palpatine.
It's a dark path, into a trackless wilderness from which few return. Not without a guide, at any rate. But it is also the shortest, quickest route between today and tomorrow.
Plagueis realized that he was taking a great gamble, but there was no turning back from it. The Dark Side had brought them together, and it would be the will of the Dark Side that decided whether Palpatine became his apprentice.
"In your studies," he said carefully, "have you ever learned of the Sith?"
Palpatine blinked as if preoccupied. "But Jedi sect, weren't they? The result of a kind of family feud?"
"Yes, yes, in some ways, just that. But more, the Sith are the prodigal offspring, destined to return and overthrow the Jedi."
Palpatine cut his eyes to Plagueis.
"The Sith are considered to be evil."
"Evil?" Plagueis repeated. "What is that? Moments ago you defined yourself as a storm. You said you were death itself. Are you evil then? Or are you simply stronger and more awake than others? Who gives more shape to sentient history? The good, who adhere to the tried and true? Or those who seek to rouse beings from their stupor and lead them to glory? A storm you are, but a much needed one, to wash away the old and complacent and prune the galaxy of dead weight." Palpatine's lip curled in anger and menace.
"Is this the wisdom you offer? The tenets of some arcane cult?"
"The test of its value is whether you can live by it, Palpatine."
"If I had wanted that, I would have forced my parents years ago to surrender me to the Jedi Order, instead of transferring me from school to private school."
Plagueis planted his hands on his hips and laughed without mirth.
"And of what possible use do you think a person of your nature would be to the Jedi Order? You're heartless, ambitious, arrogant, insidious, and without shame or empathy. More, you're a murderer."
He held Palpatine's hooded gaze and watched the youth's hands clench in fists of rage.
"Careful, boy," he said after a moment. "You are not the only being in this plush stateroom with the power to kill."
Palpatine's eyes opened wide, and he took a step back.
"I can sense it."
Plagueis grew deliberately haughty.
"What you sense is a fraction of what I can bring to bear."
Palpatine appeared suitably chastened.
"Might I be of some use to the Sith?"
"Possibly," Plagueis said. "Perhaps even likely. But we would have to wait and see."
"Where are the Sith?"
Plagueis allowed a smile.
"Just now there is only one. Unless, of course, it is your will to join me."
Palpatine nodded.
"I do wish to join you."
"Then kneel before me, and pledge that it is your will to join your destiny forever with the Order of the Sith Lords."
Palpatine stared at the floor, then genuflected, uttering,
"It is my will to join my destiny forever with the Order of the Sith Lords."
Plagueis extended his left hand to touch him on the crown of the head.
"Then it is done. From this day forward, the truth of you, now and forevermore, will be Sidious.
When Palpatine stood, Plagueis took him by the shoulders.
"In time you will come to understand that you are one with the dark side of the Force, and that your power is beyond contradiction. But just now, and until I tell you differently, abiding submission is your only road to salvation."
Chapter 12. Seduced by the Dark Side of the Force. The obedient orphan stood shivering in swirling snow. Around him rose ice pinnacles shaped like jagged teeth. A glacial wind howled through them. Plagueis stood nearby, flakes of snow and ice gyrating around him, but never lighting on him, melting before they reached him. Unlike Sidious, who was outfitted in a thin enviro suit, the Sith Lord was wearing only a cloak, narrow trousers, and a skull cap.
"It was on this world
that I first became aware of my force powers and dark impulses, he said loudly enough to be heard over the wind. Compared with temperate Munalinst, Megiddo is ruthless and uncompromising. But I learned to adapt to its harsh conditions, and before the age of 8, I could venture out into the most violent storm dressed in less than you wear now. But I haven't brought you here to acquaint you with my past, Sidious. If you were of a species acclimatized to these conditions, I would have brought you instead to a desert world. If you were an aquatic being, I would have stranded you on dry land. The divide between the ways of the Force as practiced by the Sith and the Jedi has less to do with the distinction between darkness or the presence of light than between, in your case, naked cold and the presence of warmth. Between distress and comfort, entropy and predictability. Plagueis paused to regard Sidious. Your blood is close to frozen. Too much time here, and you will die. That is what you will think at the beginning, when the dark side has sniffed you out and sidled up to you. You will think, I will die. The dark side will kill me. And it's true. You will die, but only to be reborn. You must take deeply into yourself the knowledge of what it means to be removed. You must feel it in the marrow of your bones because it will ever be thus. Plagueis laughed shortly. Perhaps I sound like some professor of philosophy in that fine college of yours in Theed. But this isn't a lecture, nor should you think of it as physical conditioning. We need instead to prepare you for what awaits you, should the dark side opt to take an interest in you. The commingling of fear and joy, of being humbled and empowered, of being escalated while at the same time used as if an instrument, to be singled out and yet subsumed by an overarching grandness. A predatory look came to his wan face as he advanced on Sidious. Now tell me again, apprentice, and in greater detail. Once more Sidious allowed his memories to unfold, and he relived the crime, the event, as he had at last come to think of it. His father's limp and bloodied body, the smashed skulls of the bodyguards, his hands clenched around his mother's slender throat. But not really, only in his mind, strangling her with his thoughts. The lifeless forms of his siblings, slumped here and there. In telling and retelling it, in reliving it, he had finally gained a kind of authority over it, the ability to see the event merely for what it was, without emotion, without judgment. It was as if the event had occurred years rather than months earlier, and as if someone else had authored the crime. When that defining moment had come, a transforming power had curled up inside him, as dark as space without stars, born of hatred and fear, but one he could now draw upon. Very good, Plagueis said, after the recounted tale had forced itself between Sidious's blue and trembling lips. I can feel your remove, and sense your increasing power. He continued to appraise Sidious while the snow whirled between them. I can't have your will tempered by feelings of regret or compassion. You were brought into being to lead. Therefore you must see every living thing as nothing more than a tool to elevate you, to move you to your destined place. This is our galaxy, Sidious. Our reality. In this pitiless place, your power is forged. Propelled by fear or hatred, even a Jedi can pass beyond the constraints of the Order's teachings and discover power of a more profound sort. But no Jedi who arrives at that place, who has risen above his or her allegiance to peace and justice, who kills in anger or out of desire can lay real claim to the dark side of the Force. Their attempts to convince themselves that they fell to the dark side or that the dark side compelled their actions are nothing more than pitiful rationalizations. That is why the Sith embrace the dark from the start, focusing on the acquisition of power. We make no excuses. The actions of a Sith begin from the self and flow outward. We stalk the Force like hunters, rather than surrender like prey to its enigmatic whims.
I understand, Master, Sidious managed in a stuttering voice.
Plagueis showed him a malevolent smile. I once said as much to my master, when in fact I understood nothing. I merely wanted to put an end to the pain. In a blur of motion, he tore open the front of Sidious's enviro suit. I am your torturer, Sidious. Soon you will make every effort to appease me, and with each lie you tell, with each attempt you make to reverse our roles, you will make yourself as shiny as an iridium coin to the dark side. So appease me, Sidious. Tell me again how you killed them. Sidious steadied himself on the scree slope, the jagged stones beneath his bloody palms, elbows and knees quivering, as if yearning to immerse themselves in the frigid waters of the crystalline blue lake at the base of the near sheer incline. A few meters above sat Plagueis, cross-legged atop a flat-topped outcropping, his back turned to Sidious, and his gaze seemingly fixed on the blinding snowfields that blanketed the mountain summit.
If you don't already want to murder me, you will before I'm through with you, he was saying. The urge to kill one's superior is intrinsic to the nature of our enterprise. My unassailable strength gives rise to your envy. My wisdom fuels your desire. My achievements incite your craving. Thus it has been for 1,000 years, and so it must endure until I've guided you to parity. Then, Sidious, we must do our best to sabotage the dynamic Darth Bane set in motion, because we will need each other if we're to realize our ultimate goals. In the end, there can be no secrets between us, no jealousy or mistrust. From us, the future of the Sith will fountain, and the diverse beings of the galaxy will be better for it. Until then, however, you must strive. You must demonstrate your worthiness, not merely to me, but to the dark side. You must take the hatred you feel for me and transform it into power. The power to overcome, to forbid anything from standing in your path, to surmount whatever obstacle the dark side designs to test you. Scarcely listening, Sidious moved with utmost care, his hands and knees seeking firm purchase on the stones. For weeks Darth Plagueis had deprived him of sleep, food, and water. Now if only he could reach the moon, his thirst would be slaked, his hunger sated, his contusions healed. Countless times the broad expanse of rock debris had slipped, and he'd had to ride the slide almost to the shore of the lake, tumbling, surfing on his front and back, abrading his ruddy skin, bruising nearly every part of himself, only to have to pick his way back to the top. Seething in silence, he managed to scale a meter more of the slope, calling on the Force to ensure his balance, to render him weightless. Fool! Plagueis derided him. Success doesn't come from summoning help from the Force, but from taking control of it and generating the power from within yourself. He sighed theatrically. Still, I'm somewhat encouraged by the progress you've made. Mere centimeters from me now, almost within arm's reach. Soon I'll be able to feel your breath on my neck and perceive the heat of your rage. Your desire to kill me, as if by doing so
you could lay claim to the authority I embody. He paused, but didn't move, much less glance over his shoulder. You want to strangle me like you did your poor, misunderstood mother. Tear me limb from limb as you did the bodyguards. Fair enough. But to do so, you will have to make a greater effort, apprentice.
Like a feline, Sidious leapt from the scree, his curled fingers aimed for Plagueis. But instead of vising themselves around the Mune's slender neck, his hands went through thin air and met each other, leading him to collapse face first atop the outcropping.
Off to one side, he heard his master laugh in scorn. Either Plagueis had moved faster than Sidious could discern, or worse yet, he'd never been there to begin with.
So easily tricked, Plagueis said, confirming the latter. You waste my time. More of this, and the dark side will never take an interest in you.
Sidious whirled, flinging himself at Plagueis, only to meet an irresistible force and be hurled backward to the frozen ground. The Mune's shadow fell over him, arms folded across his chest. Plagueis loomed.
If you're to succeed in inhabiting both realms, Sidious, the profane world and that of the Force, you need to learn how to use guile to your advantage, and to recognize when others are employing it.
Without extending a hand, Plagueis tugged him to his feet.
If you can survive a few more days without sustenance or rest, I may be inclined to teach you.
Clawing his way across the tundra, his body rashed with lightsaber burns, Sidious looked up at Plagueis imploringly.
How much longer, master?
Plagueis deactivated his weapon's crimson blade and scowled.
Perhaps a moment, perhaps an eternity. Stop thinking of the future, and anchor yourself in the present.
A Sith apprentice is the antithesis of a Jedi youngling, nurtured in the temple, battling a floating remote with a training lightsaber. A Sith acquaints himself with pain from the start, and inflicts it as well. A Sith goes for the throat, just as you did on your family starship.
Sidious continued to gaze at him.
I meant, how much longer will it take me to learn?
The Mune sized him up with a look.
Hard to tell. Humans are their own worst enemies. Your body isn't meant to withstand real punishment. It is easily injured and slow to heal. Your olfactory and tactile senses are relatively acute, but your auditory and visual senses are extremely limited.
Have I no strengths, master?
Plagueis dropped to one knee in front of him.
You have the Force, apprentice, and the talent to lead. More, you have the bloodlust of a serial killer, though we need to hold that in reserve unless violence serves some extraordinary purpose. We are not butchers, Sidious, like some past Sith lords. We are architects of the future.
Sidious swallowed and found his voice.
How long?
Plagueis stood, reigniting the lightsaber as he did so.
Not a standard day sooner than a decade.
Part 2. Apprenticed to Power. 54 to 52 years before the Battle of Yavin. Chapter 13. Riders on the Storm.
In mad pursuit of their prey, and all but taking flight, the two Sith, master and apprentice for 11 years now, bounded across the grassy terrain, their short capes snapping behind them, vibroblades clenched in their hands, and bare forearms flecked with gore. Blood caked in the human's long hair, and dried on the Mune's hairless brow. Twisting and swirling around them was a herd of agile, long-necked quadrupeds,
with brown and black striped fur, identical and moving as if possessed of a single mind, leaping at the same instant, reversing direction, cycloning gregariously over the short-napped savannah.
"This is not a chase," Plagueis said as he ran. "This is a summoning. You need to get behind the eyes of your target and become the object of its desire. The same holds true when you summon the Force. You must make yourself desirable, fascinating, addictive, and whatever power you need will be at your command."
Blended into the herd, the animal Sidious had fixed his sight on would have been indistinguishable to normal beings. But Sidious had the animal in his mind, and was now looking through its eyes, one with it. Alongside him suddenly, the creature seemed to intuit its end, and tipped its head to one side to expose its muscular neck. The moment the vibroblade stuck, the creature's eyes rolled back and grew opaque. Hot blood spurted but quickly ceased to flow. The Force departing, and Sidious drawing its power deep into himself.
"Now another one," Plagueis said in a congratulatory tone. "And another one after that."
Sidious felt himself shoved into motion, as if by a gale force wind.
"Feel the power of the dark side flow through you," Plagueis added from behind him. "We serve nature's purpose by culling the herd, and our own by sharpening our skills. We are the predatory swarm."
The low-gravity planet was known then as Buoyant, its bewildering jumble of flora and fauna, the result of an experiment by a long-forgotten species that had tweaked the atmosphere, set the world spinning faster than nature had intended, and encouraged the growth of lush forests and expansive grasslands. The still-functioning machines of the ancients dotted the landscape, and millennia later, the animals they had imported were thriving. Nothing moved slowly or ponderously on rapidly spinning Buoyant, even day and night, or the storms that scrubbed the atmosphere with violent regularity. Elsewhere on the planet, in dense forests, in arid wastes, beneath the waves of inland seas, the two Sith had already taken the lives of countless creatures, culling, sharpening, marinating themselves in a miasma of dark side energy. Kilometers from where the quadruped hunt had commenced, Plagueis and Sidious sat under the enormous canopy of a tree whose trunk was wide enough to engulf a land speeder and whose thick branches were burdened with flowering, parasitic plants. Breathing hard and drenched in sweat, they rested in silence as clouds of eager insects gathered around them. The pulse beats of the Mune's trio of hearts were visible beneath his translucent skin, and his clear eyes tracked the slaloming movements of the escaping herd.
"Few of my people are aware of just how wealthy I am," he said at last, "since most of my riches derive from activities that have nothing to do with the ordinary business of finance. For many years, my peers wondered why I chose to remain unwed, and ultimately reached the conclusion that I was, in essence, married to my work, without realizing how right they were. Except that my real bride is the dark side of the Force, what the ancients called Bogan, as separate from Ashla. Even the Jedi understand that there is no profit in partnering with a being who lacks the ability to understand what it means to be in the grip of the Force, and so the Order restricts marriage by dogma, in service, so the Jedi say, to the purity of Ashla. But Ashla is a perversion," he went on, "for the dark has always preceded the light. The original idea was to capture the power of the Force and make it subservient to the will of sentient life. The ancients, the Celestials, the Rakata, didn't pronounce judgment on their works. They moved planets, organized star systems, conjured dark side devices like the Star Forge, as they saw fit. If millions died in the process, so be it. The lives of most beings are of small consequence. The Jedi have failed to understand this. They are so busy saving lives and striving to keep the powers of the Force in balance
that they have lost sight of the fact that sentient life is meant to evolve, not simply languish in contented stasis. He paused to glance at Sidious. No doubt the texts I have provided contain references to the so-called potentium theory, that light and dark depend on the intention of the user. This is yet another perversion of the truth, perpetrated by those who would keep us shackled to the Force. The power of water and the power of fire are entirely different. Glaciers and volcanoes both have the potential to transform landscapes, but one does so by burying what lies beneath, where the other spews forth new terrain. The Sith are not placid stars, but singularities. Rather than burn with muted purpose, we warp space and time to twist the galaxy to our own design. To become one of grandiloquent power requires more than mere compliance. What's needed is obstinacy and tenacity. That's why you must always be receptive to the currents of the dark side, because no matter how nimble you are or think you are, the Force will show you no pity. As you've learned, your body sleeps, but your mind is never at rest. Getting to his feet, Plagueis extended his long arms in front of him and loosed a storm of Force lightning that crackled over the landscape, igniting fires in the grass. A Jedi sufficiently strong in the Force can be trained to produce a facsimile, but not true Sith lightning, which, unabated, has the power not only to incapacitate or kill, but to physically transform the victim. Force lightning requires strength of a sort only a Sith can command, because we accept consequence and reject compassion. To do so requires a thirst for power that is not easily satisfied. The Force tries to resist the callings of ravenous spirits. Therefore, it must be broken and made a beast of burden. It must be made to answer to one's will. But the Force cannot be treated deferentially, he added as a few final tendrils sparked from his fingertips. In order to summon and use lightning properly, you will someday have to be on the receiving end of its power, as a means of taking the energy inside yourself. Sidious watched the last of the brush fires burn out, then said, Will I eventually be physically transformed? Into some aged, pale-skinned, raspy-voiced, yellow-eyed monster, you mean? Such as the one you see before you? Plagueis gestured to himself, then lowered himself to the ground. Surely you are acquainted with the lore. King Omen of Onderon, Darth's scion and nihilus. But whether it will happen to you, I can't say. Know this, though, Sidious, that the power of the dark side does not debilitate the practitioner as much as it debilitates those who lack it. He grinned with evil purpose. The power of the dark side is an illness no true Sith would wish to be cured of. On Hypori, they were the prey, standing back to back in their black zaid-cloth hooded robes, at the center of concentric rings of droids, retrofitted by Bactoid armor to function as combat automata. 200 programmed assailants, bipedal, treaded, some levitated by anti-grav generators, armed with a variety of weapons, ranging from hand blasters to short-barreled burst rifles. Plagueis hadn't allowed his young apprentice to wield a lightsaber until a few years earlier, but Sidious was brandishing one now, self-constructed of Frick alloy and erodium, and powered by a synthetic crystal. Made for delicate, long-fingered hands, as much a work of art as a weapon, the lightsaber thrummed as he waved the blade from side to side in front of him. Every weapon, manufactured by whatever species, has its own properties and peculiarities, Plagueis was saying. his own blade angled toward the ferrocrete floor of the battle dome's fabricated cityscape, as if to light a fuse.
Range, penetrating power, refresh rate. In some instances, your life might depend on your ability to focus on the weapon rather than on the wielder. You must train yourself to identify a weapon instantly, whether it's a product of blast